In 2017, a bunch of nerds were tasked by a podcasting network to come up with a monthly show. These men promptly came up with the idea for a comic book show where they could educate the masses. Today, they use this show as a platform for helping their fellow nerds in any way they can. If you have a nerdy question, if Google hasn't helped you, and if you have a Facebook account, maybe you can ask the Nerds for Hire.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Nerds for Hire. I've got Trevor Camp.
Hey.
Asa Gray.
I like whenever you can tell you forget what the intro's supposed to be.
I go nerd up on it. Yeah, no, that happens. That hits my brain every time because I start the nerd up intro and I'm like,
wait,
I'm
hosting a show that's not nerd up.
This is a different show. Yeah. Similar.
Yeah, you talk about nerdy stuff and news and nerd stuff at your other one, and this we talk about nerd stuff.
No news.
Get it right,
no, just nerd stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, and I'm your host, Jesse Kimble. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to start off with, and this is probably a terrible idea, and I apologize up front for this, but we're going to start with a bit.
Oh, we're starting with this?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just going to do this at the beginning. We're just going to get it out of the way.
You want to explain while all right, we're so while opening he's opening
real
it
quick,
up.
While I'm opening this, the key to this is as we're chewing, Jesse's filling time, and we are moving very far away from the microphone.
Got it.
All right, so here's the thing. A long time ago, I saw in the Overwatch League, they were advertising these Sour Patch Kids Fire and Ice. I went to the dollar store like a while after I'd seen that, and they were buy two, get one free. So I grabbed a pack of each and then a pack of regular ones. All right, so
we need video on this.
I don't know what kind of sorcery that is.
It's unsettling. So I brought some of the ice ones in because the fire ones are kind of gross. I didn't like them. But I really like the ice ones. And they're all kind of like these lemonade-ish flavors. But the thing is, what they advertise is like afterward you have this cold sensation. And same thing with the fire one, you have like a hot sensation. Yet the Sour Patch Kids, the ice ones, I don't understand it, but my mouth legitimately felt cold. It was almost like I had just brushed my teeth, but there was no minty flavor to it.
I don't particularly care for the flavor of them. Like those lemonade flavors just don't, they're not clicking.
Try the red one.
That was the first one I tried.
It's like somebody it's like somebody gelatinized like Vicks Vapor Rub and dipped it in sugar.
A little bit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That is a very Vicks.
But it doesn't have the flavor.
No,
but it's got that feeling like
And that's the same sorcerous thing going on with like the fire ones.
Because it's like you ate a cinnamon candy. But
exactly. You finish it, you have the sensation of like I just ate a hot tamale.
I mean,
or something along those lines, and then but there's none of that flavor there to it. It's just a regular Sour Patch Kid just with that after effect.
Nothing regular about that. I'm pretty sure I got a new kind of cancer. Like I'm patient zero after that.
I
feel dirty.
I'm glad I did it, but that's definitely not a purchase. If I see those in the line at the grocery store, that's not going to be a
purchase
buy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, so I told Asa about these because did you try the fire ones?
No.
Okay.
I did. You had me try the fire ones.
Yeah, I know I had you try.
Every time we went to DG to try to find them, they only either had none of them or just the fire ones. They never had the freeze ones, and you were like, no, the fire ones aren't any good. I'm not going to get those.
Yeah.
So I never tried the fire ones.
So, yeah, and, like, I found, after that, like, after a few times here at the DG across from the studio, I went back to the Jackson one because it's near where I work, and they had them just there on the end cap display again. So I bought a couple of bags to make other people try them. And
because the important thing when you find something weird is to subject your friends to it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Glad
we're on the same page.
Yeah. And so, because this is how Trevor first tried the fire ones. And so I had this bag of
equally
ice
disturbing, by the way, the fire ones.
Your brain can't reconcile what's happening in your mouth is
no,
the problem.
I feel violated.
So I've had this bag of ice ones now for probably 2 months. And I keep telling Asa,
wait, have they been sitting in your
car for
2 months?
Not my car. Not my car. They would be much different consistency at this point.
They are warm. Like they've been in
my car for a few hours now.
Yeah.
But, worse, Trevor. They've been in a cabinet in my home where Asa has been multiple times since they've been purchased.
It's always just like, I always think like it's usually after D&D, I'll like get halfway home and be like, I needed to remind him. Yep. And I forget.
And I never think about it. And then, yeah, right before we were about to start recording, I was like, oh, let's do a moment of silence. And then after, right before I said that, I thought, oh, I have those Sour Patch Kids. And I almost said, hey, so remind me after the show. It's like, no, we're both going to forget. I'll be right back. And, yeah, so then I made that an opening bit to the show. And once again, I apologize. I hope you enjoyed it. I know you guys didn't enjoy the Sour Patch Kids. I hope the listeners...
That's one of those things where we need to move to that. I think that would work better on a video format, but I don't know why I'm reaching for another one.
Though. I don't know why either. It's like,
just do it.
I don't understand what's happening.
Trevor, just get another one.
The blue one was more of a normal Sour Pitch Kids flavor.
I'm going with the blue
Sour Patch Kids.
This is just a blatant attempt to get Sour Patch as a sponsor, really.
I mean, I would absolutely our DMs are open. That.
Just hit us up.
Just slide on in.
Sour Patch Kids did not pay for this portion of the podcast, but they can.
For sale. Mm.
Let us know. We're cheap.
We're so cheap.
I'll say so many things. All right, so
look what we're willing to do for free.
All right, so it was brought to my attention last week that we spent a little bit too much time on Magic the Gathering and a criminally low amount of time on every other tabletop. experience, and I take the blame for that.
Card also, games audio are, issues,
that too.
Oh, that was just.
But that was that didn't really impact the time management problems that I had.
That's true.
Just the stress levels.
It did compound them.
It did compound them. That's accurate. But yeah, no, I love card games. I've been big into them since the Pokemon trading card game years and years ago. Just yeah. So. D&D, that's been a thing that we've been getting into a whole lot recently, particularly 5th edition for us, though like I played a few other editions at this point now, starting with like the first time I actually played through any kind of a campaign was it was me and Asa, as well as a few other people from the network, with our friend Hunter Hendricks. He DM'd a 4th edition campaign for us.
How long has 5th edition been around?
A few years.
I wasn't sure. Because was 5th edition out when you guys were playing this 4th edition game?
Yes.
Okay.
But 4th edition was just the one that Hunter was more familiar with, because that's the one that he's been playing for a while.
Fair enough.
It's less popular than like 3.5.
Which, I don't actually know the difference on all the editions. All I know is like 5 streamlines combat a whole lot.
Yeah, basically like 3.5 was a lot more role-playing and the combat wasn't very... fun is what I've always heard. And then you move to like 4th edition, which really changed up a whole lot about the combat. So the combat was a lot more structured. But a lot of people complain there wasn't as much role playing, which I contend there's as much in D&D. There's always as much role playing as you want there to be.
That's true. You can do extreme math and just, you know,
well,
add up numbers all day.
I wonder,
or you can make it really immersive.
I wonder if they meant like in combat. Because in four, when we were playing, because you said we were playing 4th edition with Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, every single one of our attacks were on a card. So it was pretty much, and they had a description. So it was pretty much just like, this is what I do for my turn in combat.
Oh, so you had a very limited ability of what you could do
Whereas
in combat.
Whereas in 5th edition, even though there are, like, multiple spells, like, but, like, look at Ben, for example, of just how many times he can, like, whatever, I can't remember the name of the spell, but where he just... pretty much just tries to make the enemy depressed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
a cantrip
that
for him.
That's Vicious Mockery.
Vicious Mockery. Anytime he uses Vicious Mockery, and it's just, and he comes up with just whatever it is that he's, Andrew makes him come up with a phrase that's usually pretty cutting.
For those who don't know, Vicious Mockery is a spell where you say something mean to your enemy, and he takes damage based on how insulting it is.
Yeah, it's really, is. Yeah, it's really funny, and Ben is just a he is a quick dude, and he's pretty clever, and like Ben's the king of the one-liners in our group, and it's
always
a whole lot
been.
Of fun. Yeah, he has been since we started playing.
Also, 5th edition came out in December 9th, 2014.
Yeah, so yeah.
Oh, so it's
wait
really
that
new.
Doesn't. The player's handbook was released August 19th, 2014. The monster manual September 30th, 2014, and the Dungeon Master's Guide was December 9th.
So basically, by 2015, all of 5th edition was out.
Okay.
So yeah, it is as far as D&D goes, it's really new. And we were playing with Hunter in, what was it, 2016 is when we started that 4th edition stuff? Something like that.
I'm the worst person to ask about dates.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It was something along those lines. Regardless, that's where we got started, because Hunter's been playing 4th edition for a long time. Mm-hmm. Because the combat is really fun, but it's kind of like every class plays kind of similar to how you would play a spellcaster in 5th edition. Huh. In that, like, all of your abilities are marked and written out exactly what they do, including, like, melee abilities and stuff
so
like that.
So I would hate 4th edition because rarely do I just swing at a guy.
Well, yeah, but on top of that, like,
you would have more attacks.
Yeah.
But okay. But like, you would have like kind of your basic attacks, uh-huh, that are your cantrips, but then you would have more powerful things that do other stuff.
Uh-huh.
Those would be your encounter powers. So you could only use those once per combat session. And then you have your dailies, which you can only use once a day.
Oh, wow.
In game. Okay. Unless you do a long rest.
You do a long rest and you get them back. So yeah, like there's a lot of things you can do, as opposed to like 5th edition, where it's basically just, I'm going to swing my axe at them,
right,
but you can, you know, add role-playing flair to it. Like, I'm going to do this extra stuff.
I'm going
to
backflip and do a backflip tomahawk throw at this guy's skull, or try to hit the sword out of his hand with my dagger.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like, as far as I know, like, that's not really something you can do in combat in 4th edition.
Oh.
There you pick from your list of abilities that you can do. And there is some, like, freedom of, like, you know, what happens. Because, mm-hmm, Hunter did that pretty frequently for us, and I always really liked it. If we got, particularly if we got a crit,
mm-hmm,
if we got a crit on something, he would just say, like, all right, what happens? Like, you
I
know,
feel like
you
a crit should always be amazing. Whether it's crit win or crit fail, and for those who don't play D&D regularly, a critical is when you roll a 20 on your D20 or a 1. There's a crit hit, which is great, and then there's a crit fail, which seems to come up much more often, which is when you get 1 and you just fail so hard in front of everyone.
And it usually ends with your character on the ground or attacking your ally,
yeah,
because you just, your arm goes stupid.
Yeah.
Which, and I also think that kind of comes, I almost want to say that would come more with just who your DM is.
It's true.
Because like Hunter and Andrew were both really good about the rule of cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to try this thing. Well, all right, well, roll for it. Whereas if you could end up with someone who it's more just like, no, that's not going to, no matter what you roll, that's not going to happen.
That's not possible, yeah.
They may have that in their head, but they'll at least let you try.
Yeah.
Yeah, a good DM will at least let you do, like, then that's the thing you can do in any edition of Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. If you want to do something, you tell the DM, this is what I'm going to do. If it's within the realm of your character's abilities, even if it's nigh impossible, a good DM will tell you, all right, well, it's not going to be easy, but go ahead and roll this check.
But, like, mm-hmm, if you wanted to do something crazy impossible, like the other night when we played and you rolled 2 20s in a row, they might just be like, you know what? You earned it.
You earned it. No, this not in a row. 2 20s simultaneously.
Simultaneously, that's right. I apologize. Yeah. I got that wrong.
A light ascend or descends from the heavens and bathes
like
you in it. And you are now able to do this ridiculously impossible feat.
I'll never forget my first roll in D&D entirely was a crit fail, and that was when you were DMing
our intro,
yeah, and we were playing with pre-made characters, and legit, like, goblins attacked us. I was a wizard, and it was my first D&D game, and I was like, yeah, I'm about to do some awesome hero guy stuff. And then, like, I rolled a crit 1, and Jesse's like, all right, you trip, your fireballs shoot off randomly in the woods, you fall out of the cart, and a donkey kicks you in the head. Well, you take 1d4 damage. I was like, whoa!
I didn't say the donkey kicks you in the head.
I recall a donkey kicking me in the head.
Because I told you.
I hit my head on something.
No, you hit your head on the way down is the justification we came up for it. Because I think I told you to take like a D4 falling damage, and you rolled 4. And the problem with like 5th edition is
you only got 6 health.
Yeah, at level 1 you have like, especially as a spellcaster, you have like 6 health maybe.
Glass cannon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like it's so.
I was almost out of the fight before I got out of the wagon.
So Trevor stands up in the back of the wagon. You know, he does his call out. He does his spell. And he rolls, yeah, nat 1 is like, well, when you're getting up, you trip.
That being said, even though I failed, it was probably one of the funnier parts of, like, the campaign. I still remember it, and I think that's what D&D is mostly about. It's all those weird crit fails and crit successes and when you do something crazy.
And that's my absolute favorite thing to do in D&D is coming up with consequences for, like, the crit success or crit fail.
Oh, God, they're great.
Like, whatever else happened in that initial campaign, I thought, like, the crit fails and crit successes were really fun.
They were really fun. I enjoyed you as a DM on your crit fails and successes.
It was a good time. And, yeah, like, that's just the beauty of D&D. It's all up to you. You can do whatever you want, like, as long as you have a good DM. And you just have to, if you want to DM something, first step to being a good DM, in my opinion, realize that it is not you versus the players.
No.
Because I, you know, I've read horror stories all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a subreddit dedicated to that.
That's true. Of yet dungeon masters that think that it is them versus their players.
And it's their job to kill their players.
Right. It's like, no, your job is to guide them through this adventure.
Which, on one hand, as like an isolated thing... as a one shot, like a Dark Souls version of D&D could actually be kind of fun.
But that's everyone knows what they're getting into. Exactly. That's different.
That's not, you know, you show up to, like, if I would have shown up to this group that you guys have and the first thing Andrew does is like almost murder me, which actually almost happened. I did go down in the first fight. But it wasn't like intended to, and you could tell how bad Andrew felt. But also how proud he was.
He was
a little bit. He was. He didn't feel that bad.
Yeah. No. He got a taste for blood in his other D&D group.
Oh boy, did he!
Because he got some friends from work. Because Andrew just absolutely loves DMing.
Oh yeah, he went hard.
You going for them Sour Patch Kids again?
Give him to Jesse. Why isn't Jesse?
No. Keep him over there.
I'm gonna leave him here.
You keep him over there.
I want to see what your willpower is.
I just need him out of reach. It's not a lot. Like, look at my stomach. No, that's
just So Andrew just loves you know, getting to be God for these things.
I can understand
for lack of a better word here.
Not because most of like D&D happens within the Wizards of the Coast universe. Mm-hmm. So there's already landmarks and continents and all of this other lore that you were just using like a sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew loves being God so much. He kind of took the loose structure of that and then made his own universe.
This is true.
Yeah, with his own deities, his own like land masses, his own
including
lore.
Hand-drawn maps.
Yeah, he has pages of maps that he drew out for this stuff.
Which, oddly enough, for Dungeons & Dragons, has no dragons in this world.
that upset
really
Ben a
little.
We
haven't really been in any dungeons yet.
That's true. Huh. Oh, God.
No, we've gone into a couple of dungeons.
Oh, man, we're playing Pathfinder.
We have been down a lot of paths.
That's true. And we've gone in a couple of dungeons.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call them. Oh, well, there's the one.
Yeah.
I'll
give you that.
The one.
There were cages and everything.
Yeah. That's the one I was thinking of.
That's a dungeon. Yeah.
All right. Castles. It's really just, it's limited to your imagination, whatever you want to do. And it's not like Andrew is some D&D, like, guru or anything like that. He started at exactly the same time the rest of us did, and he just had a blast with it, and then he invested a lot of time and money into it.
Yes, he did.
Which you don't have to, for anyone out there looking to get in D&D, two things real fast. You don't have, you can invest as much money as you want to.
Yep.
Also,
but you don't have to invest hardly anything for it to be fun.
Oh, yeah. You literally paper and pencils, and that's really all you need. Everything else you can kind of just theater of the mind it. But the other thing is bad D&D is worse than no D&D.
Accurate. Very accurate.
We are very lucky to. I've been every D&D game I've played. I've had great DMs and great people playing with. But I've heard just absolute horror stories of people power tripping and it just ruining the experience for people who are just getting in.
Also, D&D is very much like that is the home of house ruling.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite things about D&D and board games in general, like if there's a rule in the game that you're like, well, that's stupid. I don't think that's how that should work.
Mm-hmm.
By all means, change it. Yeah. If everybody else agrees.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not something like, you can just like spring on people when it happens. That has to be kind of either a discussion or a known aspect of your play style whenever the game begins.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's just something you decide to do in advance. You make sure it's cool with everybody else. Everybody thinks it's a good idea.
Like in this campaign when our DM said that we wouldn't get any ability points with our racial traits, because you get certain points based on what races you pick. But for his world, he didn't want to do that.
And he had other ways of giving us those ability points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it worked out. I was very skeptical and salty at the beginning, but it's worked out just fine.
Yep. Yeah, playing a Goliath and not getting that strength buff is...
they get so many racial benefits. Like, such a big boost.
Humans do, too. And
yeah.
Yeah. Because
nobody went human.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah.
We have three humans in our campaign.
Why do I not... Yeah, we have your humans.
No, isn't it just Steven and Ben?
And me.
I didn't know you were human.
I didn't know you were human.
What did you guys think I was?
I don't know. Bald guy? Just assume Monk was a race, maybe.
I do think that I thought that. Because I'm trying to, like... Because it's like you're basing your carry off of Terry Crews. And I don't see Terry Crews as human because look at that body.
Reasonable.
And I think it's...
Reasonable.
I don't know. I knew you were a barbarian. I don't know if I thought you were also a barbarian.
A Goliath.
I thought you were a giant because you played a giant in the last campaign.
Oh, yeah. In the fourth edition campaign that I played with Asa.
I definitely thought you were a giant. So I've been imagining you just like super tall.
I mean, he is tall. Barry is... my character based on Terry Crews' name is Barry. Come at me. he's the same height as Terry Crews. I think he's 6'3 or 6'4 or something like that. So he's above average height.
Yeah.
But he's not like the 7'1 of Liam.
Okay.
7'5.
Okay. I thought you were a short Goliath.
That is a short Goliath.
Oh god.
they're like 8 feet average.
I don't remember how tall my Goliath was in the fourth edition campaign. I just know it was tall.
Tall. Mm-hmm. Big fellas. Half joint.
And I was small. I was a halfling.
It's true.
I kind of miss him.
Yeah.
He was a cool character, too.
Do you enjoy playing a bird now?
Yeah. It's... So, coming...
It always seemed like a weird, species to, like, learn how to play.
And I don't fly because my character flavor backstory, he's missing a wing.
You handicapped yourself on racial traits for a good story.
I genuinely assumed that he just wouldn't let me fly.
So he came up with a reason not to be able to.
Yeah, so I just came up with a reason to like, or that also like, okay, I'm going to forget that I can fly, so might as well just take it off the table.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair.
I designed my character not realizing how not serious any of you take the campaign or
not
backstory.
Even a little.
I thought it was going to be a little bit like on the spectrum from Lord of the Rings to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I definitely thought we would be closer to Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Not basically the gang travels through, like, the gang becomes a traveling circus.
Honestly, if you watch the show Disenchantment, it reminds me very much of our D&D campaign.
A little bit.
I'm two or three episodes into it.
The level of seriousness we take it.
So, and I wasn't expecting that. So that's why my next, like, as soon as Andrew kills me, y'all are going to hate me. I'm going to not be invited anymore. Because
I don't know if that should be a goal.
Oh, I'm sorry then.
I mean, he could try.
I'm gonna figure out how to be useful in combat, so you'll want me.
That's fair.
But it's going to be more in tune with the role playing aspects of like in a role playing sense, because like combat and stuff, he's a lot of fun. Like I like being an archer, just being able to stand back and
yeah.
Like especially it's like okay, two attacks in a turn.
Are you gonna be Jerry the halfling jerk face?
No, I'm not giving you anything.
You're not going to give me anything?
It's an idea that I've had pretty much any campaign that I've ever started, but I never like really flesh it out enough to, and then I end up finding something else that seems to be either is cooler to do or like the group needs a...
Healer.
Like yeah. Or like, oh no, we probably need a damage dealer more than anything right now.
Mm-hmm.
Something that never happens.
Because I'm always the one with the...
Everybody always wants to be medic. I don't know.
I'm always the one with the least experience. Yeah. So they let me be damage dealer because that's pretty much the easiest to play.
Yeah.
So it's less stuff for me to keep
Hulk
track
smash
of.
Smash is a pretty basic idea.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what I've always been. Actually, this is the second ranger I've been. But that's also... I've always specced towards damage dealing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So...
You might like magic, like a cat spellcaster, but you do have to like a medium amount of homework.
Yeah, because honestly, like I love Steven.
Mm-hmm.
I do, but like Ben Martin is the kind of man that absolutely can play a spellcaster in 5th edition.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, yes.
He always has like all the information he needs. He has all the stuff at the ready. He knows how to look his stuff up, mm-hmm. and he knows what he's going to do on his turn. Steven is the opposite of that.
He waits. He waits to decide what he's going to do. Until
I contend
becomes,
that's
becomes
part
his
of
turn.
His character.
And, well, because like Steven also just forgets. Like we, there has to be some structure to how you play. Like we're pretty lax about a lot of stuff in our campaign
mm-hmm.
because we just want to have fun. Right. And if we're not having fun, then why do it?
Yeah, what's
it's
the point?
True.
And I know some people have more fun doing the challenge of it, but I'd rather just hang out with my friends, roll some dice.
And,
yeah, and just screw
talk
around
about
at night.
A goofy fantasy world where we did some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Steven, though, like doesn't really know how most of his spells work. He just knows he has them and he has a general idea. So
he comes it through in a clinch, man. He saved
he
my
does.
Character's life.
No, like I'm not saying that Steven's character's bad or anything, and like you know, he plays it fairly well, and he actually has gotten a lot more into role playing. Which is something he did not do at all in the first campaign.
We didn't. None of us really did role playing. Really, me and you did.
I was about to say, yeah, me and you did some
like some of our role play arguments were very real inspired. We got in. We got well into the characters. We'll just say that.
Yeah, yeah. There was one in particular that may have edged a little bit further in real life.
Is that the one where everyone ended up on the couch except for you two, and were the only ones left at the table yelling at each other?
That story is exaggerated a hair.
Well, the thing is, me and Jesse have known each other since high school, and apparently nobody in that group had seen me and Jesse actually fight before. Or not. We were not really fight, but argue.
Yeah, we had a disagreement.
We both argue very passionately and very loudly.
Yeah, especially if it's something we feel passionate about.
Especially if we feel like the other person is wrong. Not that I'm right, that they are wrong.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, Trevor and I have had arguments like that before. Like, Trevor is the one man that I know, and I feel like he feels the same towards me, that, mm-hmm. like, I'm not going to say something or get, like, under his skin to the point that he doesn't want to be my friend anymore.
No, no.
Like, we have our disagreements. We move on.
There's very little you could say to me to, yeah, no. You're stuck.
Yeah.
You'd have to go. You'd have to go nuclear.
Yeah, and like there, I don't know how nuclear it's possible for us to go at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We both got pretty thick skin, but we apparently freaked everyone out that night.
Yeah, everybody thought we hated each other a little bit, and then they're like, you know, the next day, me and Trevor talking again. Like,
my wife is like, "Are you guys okay?" I was like, "Yeah, that's." You didn't know me in college. Okay, I got it. Yeah, you didn't hang out with me and Jesse in college.
This is just a thing.
This is mm-hmm. You should have seen when Halo was big.
Oh no.
We had to be on the same
team.
Don't tell
him that Master Chief Collection is going to be on Game Pass.
He's sitting right there.
Oh no.
I already have the Master Chief Collection.
I do too.
I don't. I'm gonna.
We can finally play. Have our Halo marathon. All right, we're going back to D&D now instead of video games here. But yeah, no,
we'll get there soon enough.
Eventually. Try D&D. One of the things we talked about last week, I think it was briefly mentioned. Yeah, you don't have to spend a whole lot of money on it. Whenever we got started, like with our group,
mm-hmm.
I went online, and I think you can find this. Like, go to your local shop first and see if they have it.
Mm-hmm. True.
The Mines of Phandalver.
Great.
It's just like, it's a campaign in a box. It's $20. Comes ready to go with five characters. You even get five minis with it.
Oh, does it come with the minis?
I thought so, didn't it? Oh, no, wait, that's right. We had to buy
But they do sell those minis for that, like in a separate pack for like $10.
It's like a little little bundle pack. Yeah, a little add-on pack you could buy to it.
It's like $10 and you get like six little figures and they're already colored and painted and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And they're based on the characters that you would get in the Mines of Phandalver.
You've seen them. We've used them as placeholders before.
Yep.
Okay.
Because we bought that pack like after we started like the night one of campaign.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. You can buy that pack if you want to. Otherwise, yeah, you just buy this box. It comes with the character sheets. Everything is like pretty, like a lot of stuff is pretty open in terms of like your customization. You're not locked into male or a female character. You could do whichever one you want there. You can choose like a little bit of your backstory, though most of it's already built in. And you can choose like your height, age, etc. So yeah, like it's got a little bit of customization, but. A lot of structure there just so you can kind of get into it. And then it comes with a really straightforward, super easy to understand book for your new dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of read through and get your missions going. Like, we did it. I managed to get us through most of that campaign before we're like, we want to go, you know, we want to make our own characters now.
Yeah, we liked it so much we didn't even finish the campaign because we were just like, we want to make our characters. Let's do this right. I mean, we didn't need a lot to realize we were hooked.
Go even farther into it.
Right. Yeah, because it's not like the campaign was bad or anything. It's just like, that was fun. Let's make our own characters now. We want to do that.
And then it happened, and we spent lots of time and money on these things, and
particularly Andrew.
I don't know. I've spent a good bit on minis, only because I really like. There's a website you can get custom minis from, HeroForge.com. Shout out.
Pay us too.
Yeah, right.
We'll advertise you for free minis.
Oh yeah.
For sure. HeroForge.
Because the HeroForge minis are really friggin' cool. Like, so if you get into it, and this is something like, and in our first big campaign we played, a few of us went on to HeroForge and got minis for those characters.
I did.
Yep. You and, well, Ben did after the campaign was over.
I think I did it first.
Yeah, I think you were the first one from that campaign to do it. But then for our new campaign, Andrew bought everybody for Christmas that was going to be in that campaign. He gave everybody in the campaign a gift card to HeroForge to get a mini for the new campaign.
And what HeroForge is basically this company you can design your mini, like, it's kind of like a character creation screen at the beginning of a video game. And then they've
so much customization.
But it's so insane. Much customization. And then for, it's like $30, I think, for a regular D&D size mini. And they do them larger, but they'll 3D print it to you and send it to your house. And it just looks so nice. And it's so cool to have your own custom character right there who looks exactly like he did in your head.
Yep. I still feel a little guilty that because he got, like, everyone, because you guys ran an entire campaign before I joined in. And so it makes sense for him to have bought all of you guys, you know, minis for the next one. Mm-hmm. But he also bought me one. And I'm like, I don't do well with gifts. It's just like, oh, well, that's super nice. And why?
It makes him happy.
Mm-hmm. We had to wine and dine you to get you in.
It was like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Andrew paid for our food, if you didn't know that.
Oh, no, well, that, okay. But it was because he had, like, a gift card that he was never going to use. It's not like he handed you an envelope of money. You'd be like, just get the job done. Like, bring
make
him
sure,
in.
Make sure he has a good time. Wink, wink.
Like, it was literally just like, hey, well, do you want to go?
I treated him right. Don't you worry.
It's like, hey,
he's in the campaign, ain't he?
You want to go to Texas Roadhouse? It's like,
is
sure.
That how he buttered you off?
No, he was just like, hey, I don't know what you're doing for dinner tonight. Let's go to Texas Roadhouse because Andrew has these gift cards and he's not going to use them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, cool. and then it was like, oh, Trevor and Amanda are coming. It's like, all right, neat. And then you guys busted out your briefcases of your, like, knockoff lipstick, except it's all like fantasy, like, oh, here's these fun stories of this. It's only once every 2 weeks. It's a minimal time commitment. You don't have to put any money into it.
We'd be great at selling Ponzi schemes.
Would.
And timeshares.
Oh, oh,
we're good.
No. We can't think like that. That's what gets people to start MLMs.
I would be great at this.
Suddenly you're in massive amounts of debt to this company. Anyway.
That said, do you guys want to just have a bunch of disposable income? Like, you can do it from home. It's super easy.
You want me to hit you with structured settlements?
No. Too mean. I don't like that this is a bit now.
Anyway. Won't tell Trevor about the bit because he'll hit you with it more frequently.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about, but God, do I want to.
It's okay.
Later.
Don't worry about it.
Later.
Don't worry about it.
All right, so anyway, yeah, so going back to D&D, yeah, we mostly regaled him with stories of Brekka, who has been bronzed now. That was Ben's character.
Oh, yeah, Hero campaign. Forge will actually send you a bronze version of your character as well.
For only an extra $10.
Oh, no.
I thought they were like $40 for the bronze
They're
ones.
They're not. They're like $100.
Really?
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't think that's accurate.
White hot
we check
room.
It after the show.
All right.
I guarantee you it's like $100 for a bronze one.
So can you do... So, like, the characters that we got were all gray. Like, they were just plain gray.
Yeah.
And then, like, we could paint them ourselves, or in my case, have Trevor paint it for you because your hands are stupid and can't do art things.
I have an addiction.
can you order them, like, colored and
no.
painted?
No.
They
no,
just
yeah.
come... Okay.
Yeah, they only no. come matte.
I mean, that makes sense. Gray. I just didn't know if that was going to be, like, an extra, like with the bronze one, an extra X amount of dollars, and you can get it to paint it and looked how you wanted.
No, because the bronze one just straight up comes bronze. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, you can't color it at all. But one thing I do want to mention, though, because I know there's a stigma around 3D printing, and it's fair. A lot of times 3D prints don't look particularly great.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've got lines in them, like they've got, you know, the details not always quite great. Mm-hmm. And when you think of something like a D&D miniature, for those of you
such
that haven't
small
seen
detail.
It, yeah, they're maybe they're a little over an inch tall.
Yeah,
like maybe. Like an inch and a quarter in height.
That seems about right.
They've got a little base on them, and yeah, that's your character. It's not big. They're little bitty figures.
So much tiny detail.
So when you think about like a 3D printer, a lot of 3D printers, especially ones that people can have in their home and stuff like that, not going to be able to do that level of detail and make it look good.
Right.
Hero Forge makes it look good.
Yeah, they have a nice printer.
They're super. Yeah, you can tell that their equipment is super professional. It comes out looking great. Like
it honestly looks almost like a molded figure as opposed to a 3D printed one.
The wing, yeah. The wing that I have on mine, like you can see the like feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it's outstretched, and yeah. you can see the lines on the feathers where.
I know that's why I did a dark wash on it, get all the grooves all there, so you can show the feathers.
Yeah.
If anyone needs a D&D mini painted, holler at me.
He just likes doing it.
I do.
He does.
Could open a business. I feel like I could charge for this.
Yeah. I mean, people do it on the internet all the time.
But then I got to go on the internet.
That's true.
There's people out there.
Bad news. That's where we are right now.
Oh, God.
We're on the internet.
I'm sorry, Mom. I promised I wouldn't venture here anymore.
That was a lie. I mean, honestly, like there is something cathartic about painting D&D minis.
Oh, I love it. It's my Saturday night.
Like, I also, like, I have dumb art hands, but I feel like I'm strangely good at painting minis.
You are. Yours looks great.
And I appreciate that coming from an art guy. I just sit there and, you know, I get, like, Andrew bought this, like, magnifying glass thing and everything for it. Which,
oh, and he got all the nice paints, too.
He got so many really
he's
nice
got, like,
paints.
$200 worth of paints.
And, like, some really nice paintbrushes. And I'm just sitting there with, like, just having a great old time. Like, we got something going on the TV in the background and just just painting. And it's way more fun than it should be.
It really is.
There's so many fun things about this game, guys. You need to try it.
You get to paint?
But again, this is one that it is very crucial on who you're playing with.
It's true.
Like if you have a group of friends that are all curious about it, and you have someone who, you know, has a knack for storytelling and that level of organization that it takes to be a DM,
or the level of improv.
Yeah, that's also because you can have this great thing like, okay, my character, everyone's going to go north to explore this thing, and then we're like, we're going to go south. Okay,
I didn't write anything in that direction.
Exactly, yeah.
Guess we're turning the map upside down.
Which is what that Mines of...
Phandalver.
Yeah, I don't know how to say that word. But that one's like a great example of just like, okay, you actually have like you have a goal, you have these missions, so it's easier to... ease into.
It's a little more of a railroad than a sandbox, but honestly, yeah, right. You want that structure and that railroad at the beginning just to learn the game mechanics and a little bit of the role play.
And it can be super, like, that sounds like something that would have been, like, super helpful for me. Because, yeah. like every game I've played has already been, like, if I'm with people who know what they're doing, it's mostly established. All right, just go. I'm like, shoot an arrow.
You are doing just fine.
Yeah.
I'm good at stealing kills.
Yes, you are really good at stealing my kills from me. You expletive.
I mean, in fairness, one time I stole his kill. I stole your kill with his arrow.
Dude, everyone steals my kills. I do so much work, and everybody else gets the kill shot but me.
That's a great, like you saying, like you stole a kill with one of my arrows. Like that's a great example of just the rule of cool. Because I play an archer, I rolled a 1, which means I immediately miss. And Andrew has the rule that a ranged character, if you crit fail like that, you end up shooting at the nearest ally.
Yep.
Which was Jesse, who has an ability that he can pretty much catch projectiles if they do below a certain amount of damage, I think.
Yeah, it's my level plus a D4. Or a D6 or something like that.
You will have to buy dice for this game. Yes. So many dice.
At least one pack.
Yeah, one pack of a tabletop set.
Which, yeah, I mean, you can grab some like Chessex, like an $8 set of dice.
Mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble.
And that the Fandelver pack comes with a pack of dice.
Well, okay.
So, yeah, like you can, I mean, you'll have to share with whoever else you're playing with if you don't want to buy more. But honestly, who doesn't like buying dice?
Especially when you can find, like, so color, like, because there are so many color combinations. Like, you'll find one that's just super pretty.
I always get a set for each character. So, like, each character gets their own die set.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have, like, a clear, this is how much of a nerd I am. I have a clear, my bedside table has, like, a clear glass recess on it. And then I put, retire the dice and the character, like, underneath the glass.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, let's be honest here. Like, we all like D&D. But everybody really just likes the accessories.
It's true. There's so many accessories.
Gotta accessorize.
Oh, so many accessories.
But yeah, so I crit fail at Jesse. Jesse then not only catches the arrow, but he's like, can I throw this at someone now that I have it?
Because that's actually an ability that my monk has.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if basically I can catch the projectile, and but I negate the damage, a certain amount of damage from it, like by knocking it away, but I might still take a little bit of damage. If I negate all of the damage, I can choose to catch it and then use it as a projectile against an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I have to use a key point. It's other complicated stuff, but the point is,
the point is, he steals my kill. This
he
way.
Catches the arrow that I totally botched. And then turns and just throws it like a dart.
Whips it at the guy that I currently have in a headlock and kills him.
And that's just the kind of cool stuff. Like, that stuff does not happen in video games as much as I would like it to.
No. Yeah, not yet. There's not that. There's not that level of improvisation and openness. Like, you can, I would say, like, as someone who hasn't even played it, but like just Donkey's videos, like the random stuff you can do in like Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild and Metal Gear Solid 5. Just like the elaborate, weird, borderline Rube Goldberg machines that you can set up as like death traps are super cool. And that's pretty much like the closest thing I can think of. But yeah, just some of the stuff you can get away with in D&D, as long as you have a DM who's amenable and you have the ability to roll to back it up.
Yep.
Is really like Shannon
gotta
diving.
Back it up with that roll, though.
Like Shannon being like, can I just throw him through a window? Roll for it. All right, you threw him through a window. Like,
now what are you doing?
Right.
Now what's going to happen? That's probably alerted guards.
Right, and there's always consequences.
There's always.
Dumb.
My favorite one, I remember.
Quick save.
I was playing a really like shady spellcaster guy, a la John Constantine. And so I'm like buying a potion from like in this bat seedy back alley of a bar. And my DM, Andrew, goes, all right, so, and he gives you the potions and says, that'll be so much gold, please. I said, so he just gave them to me? And he goes, yeah. I go, well, I laugh at him and walk away with it. and he just looked on his face like, that's going to come back at you.
Andrew will remember this.
Well, because that was one of the things, like, that argument going back earlier, that kind of stemmed a little bit from this sort of concept. Like, yeah, that's something you could do in D&D. Like, Elder Scrolls is probably the closest, like, video game out there that really comes to, like, being punished for what you're doing. Like, in terms of an RPG. And a lot of RPGs, think to Zelda. You walk into this guy's shop in Ocarina of Time. He's just sitting there minding his own business. He's trying to sell some pots.
Mm-hmm.
You destroy all of them in hopes of finding 20 cents. Like, that's something that you can do in Zelda over and over again, and no one cares. You do that in Skyrim.
It's a pottery-based economy.
You do that in like an Elder Scrolls game like Skyrim or something like that, and the shopkeeper's there, and you're like stealing or destroying his stuff. He might call the guards or something like that.
Right.
That's a level of consequence. In D&D, it depends on your DM, but if after you have cleared some enemies, you decide to loot this person's house that has currently been evacuated but intends on returning, there might be consequences.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, if you steal from a shopkeeper,
there's more than likely going to be guards coming.
Some consequences to it.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
It won't be like Skyrim style where, like, you're three, you know, towns away and they're like, we heard about your thieving in so-and-so town.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming with us. It'll come back in some other way.
That's why my character could disguise himself.
Which, like, as like that kind of really plays into it, because if you were in a city probably doesn't have the correct permits to be running some sort of shop,
mm-hmm.
like, you're, that's not going to be a guard issue.
No.
Now you've just
That's an assassin issue.
Yeah, you've potentially upset a thieves guild
or something.
Right.
Yeah. I kept waiting for that to, you know, come back to haunt me, but we ended the campaign before I got my comeuppance.
He really wanted to move on to his, because that one was one where we were playing a straight up, like, 5th edition campaign.
That was Storm King's Thunder, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. We were playing, like, it was actually a really cool one, too. There's a bunch of tribes of giants, and there was some giants doing some giant things, and they don't like humans very much, and then we had to stop them from, you know, killing all humans.
Destroy all humans.
So, yeah, no, it was actually a really interesting story and a really interesting campaign. I know I didn't make it sound that way, but really interesting campaign. But it was straight up, like, it's one you buy from Wizards. Like, it's one they already have there. It's a big book. But
it's a very large book.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to it than what we did. But Andrew, while working on this, was like, I really want my own world so I have more control over this. And before we could do any more in that campaign, we went to Andrew's world.
Well, we finished that campaign. We just didn't max out our characters.
I thought there was more to do in that campaign.
I mean, there's more to do, but we did all this. It's kind of like...
we finished that story?
We finished the main quests.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I didn't think we had.
Yeah. I mean, there was other ways we could have gotten there and harder roads, but we picked apparently the easiest way to complete it. Unknowingly.
Man, we... Well, okay. A lot of our stuff was
hill
very
giants.
Much like...
Hill giants, man.
It just makes... I am a hill dwarf. Oh, Ben. All right, anyway. Yeah, a lot of our stuff was that, like, Ace's experience is a little bit in our campaign. Andrew sets up all these things where there's this intricate way to get in and out of something. Or, like, you know, a way that you should do it, like how you would find it in a video game. But instead of doing that, we frequently decide, what do you guys think of the front door? Well, we have to have a plan if we're going to go to the front door.
I bet we can just kick it through. I roll to kick it through.
Liam, no!
Or my favorite, I think I get a sick joy from frustrating our DM. Like, we at one point in our last campaign, we're presented with a door that it has, like, an obvious puzzle concept, like, where we have to go, like, quest to get this item. And one of our guys, Ben, goes, well, I have this...
It's a stone door, right?
He goes, it's a stone door, right? And he said, yes, it's a large, immovable stone door. He goes, all right, I cast phase into stone. He just phased into the stone wall and phased on the other side. And I was like, well... I'm going to use Misty Step, which is like a teleportation. I just teleported on the other side of the wall. And you could tell that Andrew didn't want to give it to us because he had all this stuff planned. But he just kind of sighed and gave it to us for the creativity.
He couldn't think of a good reason not to. So,
which all he could have really said is it's warded by magic.
Yeah, it's enchanted.
It's enchanted. That's all I get. There's an enchantment on it.
But yeah, if you ask Andrew now, he'll tell you. He didn't really have a solid plan for that night anyway. He was going to send us on some kind of runaround because he hadn't quite like studied up for that part of the campaign.
Because we ended up going somewhere different.
Yeah.
That wasn't that campaign, but there was a similar thing where it's like, okay, we have like three choices of things we can do. And we picked the one he assumed we wouldn't.
We always
so
do.
So he didn't really have a whole... He had like the first part ready, but then after that, he had to improvise. And he did a really good job with it.
I never know when he's improvising.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Except for this one time. Because he just like, all right, well, you find a chest. And in the chest is the deck of many things. Which he had been dying to use because he bought... an actual deck of many things.
And for those who don't know about D&D, the deck of many things is one of the most powerful items in D&D. It can rewrite entire histories of a character, destroy characters. Like, you can jump up three levels, and you can be imprisoned in a diamond in a parallel dimension. You know, it's it can go so wrong and so right so fast.
See, yep. That's why I would never do one of those. Actually, I need to start. Like,
it's like gambling.
Because we have, like, the whole, don't we? Like, isn't there, like, a hole?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a portable portal currently that you can pull random stuff out.
Yeah, you can just reach in, and it could either be something useful or just...
I've never pulled anything useful out of it. I've used that thing 3 times in this campaign. I've never pulled a useful item out. Hmm. Pulled a coyote out once, or wolf, I think he said.
Yeah, it was a wolf.
Like, that was the most useful item, because at least you could hurt somebody with an angry one. And then it just attacked us.
Yeah, it had no loyalty to us.
It had no loyalty at all.
We freed you from the hole.
I want to go back into the hole. Bring it back. Yeah, well, the deck of many things. And as an example of what it can do, Ben, the first card he drew from the deck of many things gave him a castle as well as riches to go with it. The next card he drew said that he was now broke, lost all items, all money, and all property. So he went from, like, you know, being this cleric that had, you know, a moderate amount of things, an average amount of things, to being an extraordinarily wealthy cleric with a castle, to then being a hobo.
In a matter of minutes. And then he spent the rest of the campaign telling all the passerbys about how he used to own a castle.
Because it's Ben. It's like the D&D equivalent of the episode of South Park where they play roulette to win back the town.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, but if we let it ride again, we could be millionaires. Let it ride. What? You won enough.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep, I drew one card. It was good, and I stopped.
I think I drew like three. I had the itch.
Steven also drew like three. Fortunately, Steven got one of those banish forever cards.
Oh, God.
But he had another card that was like rewrite history.
And so he just went where he didn't draw that card.
Yep, so he rewrote history where he chose not to draw a card.
I mean, clever. Very clever.
Yeah.
That was funny, though. The deck of many things is very interesting. You don't have to buy a physical one. You can just do, like...
All these resources are online. You can get PDFs of everything of this.
So much of it is on the internet.
There's a lot of fan-made content. There's
so
even
so much fan-made content.
Oh, yeah. There's actually a Dwayne the Rock Johnson character that somebody put in, created, and made stats and a move list for.
That's legit.
You can just put in your campaign.
Yeah, in anywhere in your campaign.
And talking about fan-made stuff, like, that's what Pathfinder is. Pathfinder is another tabletop... It's basically D&D.
It's 3.5 extended.
It's like, so many people disliked, I think it was 3.
Fourth edition.
Was it 4th?
Because so this was, everybody loved, like 3.5, Pathfinder is 3.5,
mm-hmm.
but Wizards doesn't have any control over it.
Because so many people were upset at the changes made in 4th edition that they all kind of banded together and be like, we'll make our own D&D with blackjack and hookers. Like, and they did, and it gained a huge following.
Because it was 3.5, but updated.
Right.
And that was a lot of people's just favorite D&D was 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all need to try 5th edition.
You tried Pathfinder?
No, I haven't.
I've legit not. I know some people who've done Pathfinder, but I really don't know the big difference
in it. I know a handful of people who swear by Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that just absolutely love Pathfinder, and apparently it's a lot easier to pick up and go with Pathfinder.
Yeah,
because people host just Pathfinder events mm-hmm. where you just go and play. So yeah, I guess pickup games are way easier, and you could just do a night of it as opposed to, you know, full on campaigns. Or you can also do campaigns. I honestly don't know much about Pathfinder other than it's heavily based on 3.5.
Right, because they hated 4 so much. Yep. But and there's also, like, if you know, the high fantasy isn't really your speed, like, that's just not a genre that you care about, like, there are a bunch of different, like, there is a Star Wars version.
Oh, yeah.
They have sci-fi versions. They
steampunk.
Have steampunk.
They have vampire, Monster Hunter ones.
Yeah.
Wild West.
You
yeah.
can find.
There's a Voltron one.
Is like, it really?
Yeah.
That's legit.
Like, if it's a world that exists and you're, that some people have found interesting, they've made a tabletop game out of it.
Mm-hmm. Or you could even like warp a version of, like, if you were super into D&D, but it's like, man, I wish there was like a Power Rangers version. You could theoretically like make your own.
Yep.
I saw where somebody did a Infinity Wars one, and like where they were taking each stone of the Infinity and matching it up, like flavoring it with different spells within the D&D universe to create like an Infinity Wars D&D, which is kind of cool.
That'd be cool.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then me, inspired by Andrew, am actively working on a superhero version.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm very excited about.
Set in modern era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped about this one too. I just like the idea. You don't get to pick your class. You have to roll for what your superpower is going to be. Think X-Men.
Yeah, it seems
you just
like
randomly get assigned a superpower that could be very useful or not at all. I mean, which I know yours is designed to, you know,
there will be NPCs with superpowers that are not at all useful. Think like Meg and Family Guy. She'd grow out her fingernails a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is this loosely based off of My Hero Academia?
And X-Men. And this other book that I'm reading. And this other Brandon Sanderson series. And I'm kind of obsessed with that X-Men, like, idea of a bunch of people
just randomly
getting superpowers.
The Reckoners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Reckoners. That was the Brandon Sanderson one. That's a great story. The people get superpowers, and they kind of do what... That's probably the most realistic version of what would happen if people got superpowers.
Like heroes?
No.
No.
Like,
the
I had to take the shot.
Think about what I talk about, like, if I wake up tomorrow and I'm Superman.
Oh, a lot of murder, huh?
Yeah.
So much murder.
So much murder. A lot of political figures dead.
Well, they kind of become the political figures.
It makes sense. I would. I kind of have to follow Superman at a battle.
Who gonna stop me?
Exactly. Yeah.
Which one of you wants to step up? Anybody?
Steelheart. That's the name of the first book, and also the name of the first villain.
Of course, it is.
Yeah. Okay. This is a young adult.
They
series.
They will call me, like, Steelheart.
It is worth noting that this is very much a young adult series, but it's a lot of fun. I still haven't read that. I need to borrow the third one from you.
Yes, you do.
Because I want to read it, but.
Because you need to know what happens with that guy that did that thing.
I do. Did they go to the place? Does he go to the thing? Like, yeah. Nouns and verbs, man. It's nuts.
The prologue of Steelheart, the first book, starts with this dude. I'm trying to remember what his power is.
Death Point.
He points at a guy.
God.
Guess what happens to him? They die. And not...
What?
Ace's reaction broke me
a little bit. I knew it was coming. Even still, just your enthusiasm behind it is like,
oh God.
I'm imagining that was his enthusiasm when he figured out what it was, and he gave himself the name.
Yeah, this is almost as bad as Taserface.
Kind of.
But yeah, so now homeboy walks into a bank, and he just starts pointing at people. And they literally...
Oh my God, I would do the Love Boat bartender move. So can I get you a drink? And
but
just finger
just,
gun him through
but,
the wall.
But
they don't just die.
They like melt away and like explode.
All that's left
and is their skeleton and clothes.
Yep.
And oh my god!
But it gets
it's horrific.
It starts off real graphic too, because it's like you just see a skeleton of a mother cradling her infant child that is now just also a skeleton. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah. That's the way it starts.
Like,
yeah.
How many, like, accidents did he have, like, pointing at random people? Hey, man, you over there. Oh. I have to leave.
No. Mom!
I have to leave forever.
Then
that's why I'm not allowed at Applebee's in Ohio anymore.
I'm wanted.
All right, so, yeah, this will bridge right into the last thing we want to talk about in a minute, because Asa and I are redonkulously hyped for the Spider-Man game coming out next Friday.
I might be more excited for the Spider-Man game than I was for God of War.
Wow.
That is saying something.
Yeah. And
like, you got, like, significantly less tan when God of War came out, so I'm impressed.
Yeah, no. I stopped seeing humans.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
a minute.
It was Kratos. I saw Kratos.
It was Kratos and Kratos alone. Kratos was my daddy.
No, and boy.
My mother.
I saw boy.
And boy.
Atreus was there. But it's because it's been marketed so wildly differently than what God of War was. God of War was, we pretty much had like one trailer and that was it. And God of War is one of my favorite franchises. Like, I understand that it's the super edgelord, try hard. I'm just angry and screaming.
If I get angry enough and scream loud enough, I will win.
Yeah. But I loved the combat.
That's
in
fair.
The original God of War series. It was so much fun, just that mindless hack and slash.
And it really did just create a genre of games. Like, God of War style combat games became a genre.
And if it didn't create it, it perfected it.
Yeah.
But so I love that. So I was super, even though I knew the combat was going to be completely different and like it was going to be a whole different story, I was super pumped for God of War, but I didn't know what I was getting into. And it, for the most part, blew me away. But Spider-Man... It's been so long, for me, that there's been a Spider-Man game that I've truly loved, and it looks like it has... I love the Batman Arkham games.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that's the combat system that they're using, or a version of it.
Which is an amazing combat system.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it, but then with Spider-Man, so the agility, the gadgets, and the web-swinging is what looks amazing, too, and just the giant open world that New York is.
What was the last time they did an open world Spider-Man game?
It's been a minute.
His last one we could think of.
The Xbox 360 ones didn't have open world, so. Yeah.
Last one I remember is Ultimate Spider-Man.
And I don't even, yeah, that one was open world.
That was with Venom.
And then they did, like, Shattered Dimensions and, like, the
follow-up. Not open world.
No, they were, like, levels, which were cool, and those were fun.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an open world. But with this Spider-Man game, we are getting, like, a new trailer every week. That's
with just
highlighting,
cool stuff.
Which is just highlighting different stuff that you can expect, and it's all done through the guise of
Peter Parker calling J. Jonah Jameson to talk about Spider-Man.
On his radio show.
On his radio show to try and tell JJJ, like, maybe Spider-Man's not such a menace. And then Jameson, you know, being Jameson, are you kidding me?
Right, and just goes off on him InfoWars style.
So I was going to say, is he basically the Rush Limbaugh of New York and Spider-Man?
Pretty much, yeah.
The same role that Jameson's always had.
He has a web show. Like, he's left the Daily Bugle and has started this, like, podcast.
That's fantastic, web actually. Show. I love that. I love that evolved.
And it's got, like, one of those super, like, hyper-righteous names, too.
Like
the truth name of his Fist.
Like
yeah, something
only,
along those
only
lines.
The truth or
Hardcore
something like that.
Hardcore truth with JJJ.
But, and then they throw in, like, subtle little nods. Like, the last one that I watched... because he has to make up a different name every time he calls in, because he almost says Peter Parker.
Peter Patterson.
the most recent one I saw, he's like, Ben Riley.
On Blunt Force Truth. Sorry.
That's just a fun nod for the Spider-Man fans.
I like that.
So, yeah, it's just really cool. And while he's doing this, you know, they're having their speech, they're having the conversation, they're back and forth. And in the meantime, you're seeing, like, new things that's happening, you know, like, that are going to be in the game. Like, different enemies you're going to see, different combat situations you're going to see, web-slinging around New York, which just, like, if they were able to make moving around the open world with Batman fun...
Huh.
Like, and I know these are two completely different studios,
right?
But it seems like Insomniac is putting a lot of what I'm looking for here. They're basing a lot of how this game is gonna run on the Arkham series.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay. Leaning on that genre.
Not a bad genre to lean on.
No.
Did
style is probably a better word than genre.
There we go.
Either way.
But they also do such a good job of weaving that into the conversation that they're having. Like, so the one that's about traversing the world is J. Jonah Jameson complaining that Spider-Man thinks New York is his own personal playground. He's doing flips and tricks and running up the walls and then launching, and he's complaining about things that you can do as Spider-Man.
And you're going, oh, that sounds great.
And it's just like, it's
happening in the video.
It's so brilliant of it's like, because, yeah, you're listening to this, but then you're seeing him actually do it and seeing the fluidity of everything and, like,
see, I've just sequestered myself away from these videos because I don't have a PlayStation, and it's just going to make me sad.
The show is called Just the Facts.
That's it.
That's
what it is. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah. But yeah.
Blunt Force Truth.
I love the idea that, like, especially now that we've gotten more of these trailers and we're seeing that it's not just, you know, Mr. Negative as the villain, but we're getting a full, you know,
We're getting the Sinister Six.
Do
we know? Are they like the big bad evil guys?
We don't know like the actual big bad,
but we know that someone. I have my guess that I 100% am thinking I'm correct. But
you want to share that, or you want to keep that spoiler?
Well, I mean, I've said it on Nerd Up, but I've changed it. It's not Harry anymore. Now it's just Norman Osborn as the Goblin. That's going to be the big reveal because
he's going to be the mayor in this.
Yeah, you see him as the mayor. You see Peter at the political rally. The statue that you get with the collector's edition, you don't know what the statue looks like. You know the top half is Spider-Man, but the bottom half is a spoiler.
Don't worry. Jesse will let you know what it is.
I mean, oh, well, no, you better not. Because, I mean, I know I'm right, but, like, I want to get there.
I'll let you know what the statue is.
Okay. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, just hold on to that one yourself.
Have you seen the statues recently?
No, I haven't seen the statue because it's not on the internet. Like, if you look at pictures of the collector's edition, it's actually got,
secret police tape, like, over...
a box going around the bottom of the statue where the top of it is Spider-Man.
Wow.
And then the bottom of it, yeah, and I pre-ordered it.
naturally. Because you had to have it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Steelbook, it's Spider-Man, and, like, anybody that's listened to any amount of Nerd Up knows about me and Spider-Man. Like, True. Or at the very least, you have to know about me and Batman, Batman and Spider-Man's back and forth with me.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was looking it up today, and Spider-Man is the most popular superhero. It apparently goes Spider-Man, Avengers, Batman, then Superman.
Thanks, MCU.
Right?
But yeah, like I, because I'm a ridiculous person, I pre-ordered that collector's edition.
And you like being Poe?
Yeah, apparently. You'd think that when you look at my purchase history on anything. But yeah, so I pre-ordered that, and I also pre-ordered the Spider-Man Edition PS4 Pro because
they made it.
Irresponsible spend monsters.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a camera now.
We do.
We could do an unboxing.
Hi.
Ooh, might do that. Check that out for the YouTube, friends. So yeah, I'll actually have an extra copy of the Spider-Man game on PS4 because Asa did exactly the same thing with God of War, mm-hmm. which makes me feel a little better about my decisions.
Yeah.
But still.
Collector's Edition and the PS4 Pro.
Yep.
Which I tried to cancel the PS4 Pro because it's like, I'm not going to be able to pay for all this. But then my friends are amazing.
We bought it for them.
They all chipped in for it.
Oh, that's sweet.
I cried. I did. Not ashamed.
You guys going to make me cry?
But it's so pretty.
I could get some waterworks going on over here.
Well, now that you said it's your plan, return it. It's over.
Give it back to the kids.
But oh, the game looks so pretty. Just the amount of like, you can craft different costumes for them. You can go and like it's. And I'm unbelievably hyped. I did not think. Going from the first reveal trailer at that E3, I guess last year, 2 years ago, and I was like, oh, that looks awful quick-timey. I don't know what I like. I don't know what I'm thinking. But then the more they showed, it's just, I've been blown away.
Just beautiful eye candy.
Right.
Now, there is one question about this game that I'm going to have you guys answer for me. And it's the most important thing to me. Can you swing out to the Statue of Liberty?
Probably not.
You couldn't in Spider-Man 2, but because you could in Ultimate Spider-Man.
Because Spider-Man 2 had the like realistic and the best web swinging mechanics in any Spider-Man game.
Did you play Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, fair.
because with Spider-Man 2, you had to actually be, if you were above, like most
there
Spider-Man
had to be
games,
stuff to attach
you had
to
actually attach your web to buildings. So you had to be underneath the skyline.
Yeah.
Whereas in a lot of other open world Spider-Man games, it was just, you're just swinging wherever.
You attach to stuff in Ultimate.
Well, yeah, but I just mean like, in there are other games that you don't.
Like Spider-Man 64? That was a...
Yeah.
It's one of those things that's like, oh man, I don't remember that
you
game
don't
until
remember
now.
Spider-Man 64?
I mean,
just,
I do now.
It was just... You were in the clouds, like they didn't even put the streets in. It was just cloud cover below you.
Wasn't that because it was poison?
No, it was because it was the N64.
Well, no,
but there was a story reason.
I thought there was a Spider-Man game that you could not get on the ground level because like there was poison gas
or something like that. But you like would swing, and it was just a pre-done swinging animation, and there was nothing in front of you, just clear sky.
Yeah, you're just swinging into the sky. But like the traversal thing, there's a bit where he's just on the subway.
Yeah.
Like a Spider-Man. And it...
Because apparently, like, interacting with citizens and stuff like that. Yeah. And there is a lot of, like, interaction with citizens in the game, like, where you can, like... You can let people take selfies with you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, you're an Xbox guy. Did you play Sunset Overdrive?
I did play Sunset Overdrive.
It's the same studio.
Yep.
Really?
So, the people who did the traversal in Sunset Overdrive...
That's awesome.
Now they're making a Spider-Man game.
Because the traversal, I heard people complain about it, but I loved Sunset Overdrive. The traversal was super smooth, super fun, but I'm like one guy.
Which, I mean, no, a lot, but I've heard a lot of people, that's why they're so excited about the Spider-Man game, is because of how much fun getting around in.
Just making me sadder.
Yeah, the problem with Sunset Overdrive wasn't like the mechanics or anything like that. It was just nobody really cared about the story,
It's
and the
true.
Story was kind of boring.
The story was kind of boring.
But, I mean, this is Spider-Man, and there is a ton of, like, lore and story information out there already for them to just kind of like, you know,
they can just
work
dip into. So the trailers, have you seen, which they do kind of edge on the side of showing too much in some of these trailers, like the one where they're talking about like New York as the open world and he legitimately is just plummeting down and you see the giant A. So he's at Avengers Tower and like Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum. is like in the shot. So that's what I'm super excited about. I was like, okay, this is a Spider-Man game, but how into...
It's in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, how into Marvel are we going to get? Like, does Iron Man show up at a certain point? Like, not necessarily as like a major plot point or definitely not playable, but...
Seeing
just
them.
Like, yeah, is Tony Stark going to be on screen?
Because like, I would absolutely love for this to be the first piece in like the Insomniac Marvelverse.
Oh, please don't let it all be on Sony.
That would be a bummer.
It would be.
For me.
Well, just in general. But also, see, and that's why I don't think it is. They debated it on Kind of Funny before, too, and it was just that, like, okay, but do you have the patience? Like, what if the next game is, like, Captain America? And it's like, I'm sure it'll be great, but...
You give me a Batman Arkham-style Captain America, I'll play that.
I mean, you give me a Batman Arkham-style, I'll play it. But if they try to, you know, shake things up, because...
No one can see the look on my face because we don't have camera. but as soon as Trevor said, like, Captain America, but Batman Arkham style, I just immediately, wide-eyed, just, I didn't know I needed that in my life. But boy, now I do.
Really, what I want is an Iron Man game.
A good Iron Man game.
Yeah, because we got one.
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah, but, like, you can upgrade different, you can load out, like, make it, like, Armored Core. Where you're setting specs for your suit, like, okay, I need the Hulkbuster because I'm got to go fight the Hulk. Or, okay, this is a stealth mission, so I need to, like, I need to be light. I need to have my invisibility going, just whatever.
That'd be really, really cool.
Like, I want that.
I think honestly, I'd rather go for the Captain America game. I'm not going to lie.
I'd play either of them.
Now that we're getting the Spider-Man one, like, I would need something. I'd need it to freshen up a little first.
Yeah,
that's fair. No, yeah, I'd absolutely. Oh yeah,
open world Thor game.
That would also be really fun.
Mm-hmm. I'd be down for that.
I mean, really, any of the
and then Kratos shows up and really just rips fun. His head off.
Well, he is a god, and that's kind of what Kratos do. So, anyway, all right, guys, we're gonna have to stop talking and theorizing about this. We're about 10 minutes over, so it's not too far.
But Spider-Man,
Spider-Man. We had to talk a little bit about Spider-Man. All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. Make sure you hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/podzilla1985. You can also contribute financially to the show if you want, patreon.com/podzilla1985. I know I've said this before, but there are actually talks in the works of revamping those rewards, making them a little bit more appealing, so keep an eye out for that. All right. See you guys next time.